people's gathering house.
Oh, well, we've already had a lot of interest in the space, you know, for people wanting to hold special classes, to invite guest speakers who are coming to SFU, but also to hold special gatherings for their departments. So we're just waiting until after the opening is done, and then we'll start taking bookings. And by then, we'll have a fee structure on how much we'll be charging for the use of the space and whatnot.
In the Great Hall of the First People's Gathering House, there are four house posts that have been carved by a member of each of the four host nations. Before the opening, we had the opportunity to speak with Lyle Sparrow, a carver from the Musqueam Nation, who shared with us the personal meaning of the house post that he carved and what it depicts.
When the Kamloops thing came out, given our past history on the boarding schools, I just wanted to, like, honor the ones that were left and never found. So that's the meaning behind the pole, is Mother Earth on the bottom, given, passing the young ones up to grandfather and freeing them. I don't know, there's just a lot of bad history about it, and my parents went through it, and it wasn't until later years that I found out, you know, what had happened to them, and, you know, sort of had me in a mode of thinking of, you know, like the other people across this country that went through the, you know, similar things, and, you know, just to honor them and, you know, give some healing to the ones that are still here and free the ones that are not. And, you know, thanks to Kamloops, it's worldwide. You know, it's not something that you can dismiss anymore and say, no, it never happened. It happened. And, you know, like I said, I'm kind of proud of my parents too, where they never really brought it up about what really happened to them in the boarding schools. But when I learned what did happen, it sort of hurts the heart.
Lyle Sparrow then went on to explain his personal experience carving this house post and some of what it brought up for him.
I mean, there were some days where it was hard, you know, because my mind is, you know, with the pole, what I was doing. And then, but at the same time, thinking back on, you know, different things that came to light as I was growing up. You know, so like I said, there were hard days and there were good days.
Later in the day, the public opening ceremony began, which included opening words from local Indigenous elders from the Squamish and Musqueam Nations, as well as various song and dance performances, including from the Red Tail Spirit Singers. Now that the First People's Gathering House at the SFU Burnaby campus has opened, it will be available to pre-invited guests from 8:30 a.m. to 4:30 p.m., Monday to Friday. This has been Danny Nezvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM. This segment would not have been possible without the continued support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Local Journalism Initiative.
With Canada's health system under strain, going digital can help heal our healthcare. From virtual visits for everyday concerns, to faster, more accurate diagnostics powered by AI, technology is transforming care. Digital Health Canada supports the people and innovations behind this change. Learn more at digitalhealthcanada.com and subscribe to our podcast.
It's time now for Gardening with Embark. And joining me in the studio is Pablo Vimas, Gardens Manager for Embark Sustainability Society, and our weekly gardens expert. And we're going to talk about your new garden here at here on the campus. You moved it a few months ago.
Correct.
A big project.
Indeed.
And imagine one that takes a lot of planning and work for anyone who's either establishing a new garden or moving something that they're they've set up. So how's it going?
Oh, thank you. Over the last 6 weeks, we've been very busy transferring our garden that is located at the south side of Tasuwang to the new area behind the Maggie Beston Center. And as you mentioned, it's a long work because here in campus, we need to pass all our requests through facility services,
right.
And just to get the permission to use this new piece of land, it took quite a bit of time because we have to have a lease where everything is detailed, who maintains what are the boundaries, everything that needs to be taken into account because it's a very public area, a lot of people crossing. Yeah. So safety is the priority for the garden too. So after all that has been detailed, we starting planning how we are going to start this garden. So the first thing what we did is there water close by? So we found water. Right. We had to bring it quite around 100 feet away, but there is water. We as well found that there is power, electrical power. There is electrical power. Then which kind of beds are we going to use? Yeah. So we at the beginning, our garden was developed in 2013. It was using cedar planks, wooden boxes.
Yeah.
But the story is that each 3 years, we need to rebuild. And we have reached a point like it's not sustainable anymore.
Right. It's just too much work, the constant maintenance of just the boxes themselves to keep the garden going.
Keep the garden going. And so we find it's not sustainable. After 10 years of experience, we decide to, together with facilities, find out what are the best options. And aluminium garden beds seems to be the best across campus in the last 5-6 years. All the garden beds around campus have been transformed into metal garden beds too. Yeah. So that was the way to go. So we have 4 feet by 4 feet by 24 inches garden beds, very nice, very big, tall enough, not to bend too low. And so there is the process, who can build for us that. So we found Green Theory, they built it for us. We have managed to find the funds for paying for these garden beds, and it's a bit of investment in there.
Yeah, I imagine.
And then the next step was, okay, so how we are going to distribute these beautiful garden beds in the new area. So we have come with different ideas, different arrangement of the garden beds. Finally, we found one that we are happy with, as well facility was happy with it, and as well we passed that through the landscapers, because as well they are going to help us to keep the grass low.
Right.
So everybody needs to be able to move their equipment. It's knowing everybody's way, and things can be maintained nicely. And once that was sorted out, thumbs up, approved, now we need to start filling those garden beds with soil. So we've been over the last 4 weeks just moving one garden bed, the soil of one garden bed at a time. So we still have some 5 more garden beds to go. But at the moment, we as well reached our gardeners, current gardeners, to give us a hand to start moving the soil, and as well asking them what are the plans for the fall. Yeah. Some of them say, oh, we are going to stop, so you can take the soil from our garden and move it. Others say, well, I would like to continue gardening over winter, so I will move my plants to a garden bed that's already ready to use, and then you can take the soil from there. So we have a big support from our gardeners, giving a hand moving the soil, and as well making available their garden beds for moving. So finally, we are with all those garden beds ready to be cultivated. And then this year we have 24 gardeners.
Oh, great.
Yes, so we have 24 gardeners. If the next year all of them return, we will have only 6 beds available, extra beds available for renting. But some of them already mentioned that they are not coming back. So I think for the next year we will have a decent amount, at least one-third of our garden beds. So one-third is 10 garden beds are ready for assigning to new gardeners.
Great. So you mentioned how for some folks they moved their plants that had already started, you know, in the old garden to the new garden.
Correct, yeah.
How successful was that? Because I know that, you know, sometimes plants just don't like that.
So we gardeners tend to use our experience and tricks. So what we do is make sure that the root is with a huge ball of soil.
Yeah.
Some plants, kale particularly, and lettuces, we just make sure that there is lots of soil around the roots,
yeah.
And then we transplant it. And yes, plants will suffer. Plants will suffer 3-4 days,
yeah.
But after that they recover very quick. And the trick is that we keep watering, mm-hmm. after transplant every day,
right.
Keeping the soil moist so the plants don't get too stressed. So far so good. So good that the plants recover. And the deer came and enjoyed our plant. So that was another thing that we were thinking, how is going to be with the wildlife that we mm-hmm. have in campus. Yeah, the deer made his presence.
Yeah.
So some of our lettuces have been munched by the deer. Well, what we can do.
Yep.
Plants are doing fantastic well. Our garden beds are self-watering, so again, it's going to be a learning process, how the self-watering system is going to work over the winter.
Mm-hmm. So what sort of, did you run water out to the boxes, and then how does it work from there?
So what we have is a kind of a little submarine, a container at least with 5 gallons of water, mm-hmm. that sits at the bottom of the garden bed.
Yep.
The garden bed has a solid, it has no drainage, so it has only one drainage hole that is 22 millimeters wide.
Yep.
And we have this kind of submarine sitting in the bottom.
Yep.
And we cover with lava rock.
Yep.
And on top of the lava rock, we put a lovely thick layer of landscape fabric,
yep.
a thick landscape fabric, and the soil comes in there.
Yep.
So the intention is when it rains, the rain will filtrate through the soil into the lava rock, because the lava rock will hold some water, but as well creates that space that water will stay in there, and when there is too much water, will just drain through the drainage hole. So, yeah, that is what we hope in theory happens, but we don't know how severe is going to be the winter, and it could be that the soil the water just freezes in the lava rock.
But the idea is that the water is down there in the bottom, and it kind of waters from below?
Bottom up, yes.
Yeah.
That is what we call a sub-irrigation system.
Yeah.
And as well, having the water available down at the bottom of the garden bed encourage roots of the plants to seek for water. So we encourage the plants are encouraged to put deep roots.
Yeah.
So because the deep roots, if there is, you forget to water 1 or 2 days, there is not much problem.
Yeah.
There is water at the bottom, and the soil at the bottom is nice and moist. So,
yeah.
But that is the idea. Sub-irrigation support a development of roots, deep roots, and not having to worry about no watering every day.
Great. And so having taken on all this work, you're going to start really seeing the benefits next year when you don't have to be rebuilding a bunch of your boxes.
Yes. So what we have decided is the Learning Garden South of Taswan will be decommissioned.
Yeah.
So we are not going to, next year we are not going to cultivate anything in there.
Yeah.
All the gardeners will be now in the new garden.
Yeah.
And yeah, let's see how it works. We know that we have a bit of wind.
Mm-hmm.
This garden is more exposed to the wind.
Yeah.
Has lots of sunlight. It's quite open. More easy for the wildlife to visit us. Lots of visitors, lots of traffic of all our students, staff, faculty, they are moving to the garden. So there is a lot of movement. Besides that, we have picnic tables, which invite everyone to come and enjoy the garden.
Mm-hmm.
So let's see how it goes, because every little aspect has to be considered.
Yeah.
So for next year, we have a second stage, which is building hoop houses.
Yeah.
So this year is so much work just moving the garden and shoveling soil that there is no time for thinking, I need to build hoop houses. So this year we are going to just use mulch, a thick layer of leaves, protect the soil, and the next year we are going to build hoop houses for those garden beds.
Excellent. Well, quite the project you've taken on.
It is a large project, but we are sure that it's going to last for another 10 years.
Yep.
We, as Embark, we see ourselves here for the next 10 years. So, and now we are more relaxed with our garden beds, that they are stable. We don't have to worry about replacing, rebuilding, yep. and just now growing food and enjoying.
Excellent. Well, thanks for telling us about that, Pablo. Pablo Vimas of Embark Sustainability, our gardens expert. How do we find out more about Embark?
So, Embark Sustainability, you can visit us in our office here in the Student Union building, or visit our website at embarksustainability.org. During this time, we have lots of events, like a community kitchen every month. We have the food rescue happening every Thursday, together with the gardening cohort that happens every Thursday. So, from now till the end of October, we are very busy organizing fall events.
Great. Thanks so much. We will be back again next week to tell you more about how you can make your garden a success. Thank you, Pablo.
You're welcome. See you next week. Yeah.
All right. Thanks to Pablo for that. And thinking of the weather, let me give you a bit of a forecast for this week. Today is the first day of fall, although we're not quite there yet. We officially transition from summer to autumn at 11:19 a.m. this morning here on the West Coast. So we got, looks like, another 35 minutes or so of, 32 minutes of summer here in Vancouver. So maybe take a little break and get outside and enjoy the last moments of summer. It's not a bad day out today. It's going to be mostly sunny with highs up to 20 degrees, cooling to 10 degrees overnight. Same for tomorrow. No clouds though, so clear skies and sunshine, highs up to 20, cooling to 12 overnight. Pretty much the same through till Friday when the clouds come in and the rain arrives on Friday night. And the upcoming weekend looks like a mix, periods of rain, chance of showers throughout the weekend. So that's our forecast for this week. And remember, today is the first day of fall and it starts in about 30 minutes. Peter.
Okay, so I'm going to begin. He mentioned the Clean Energy Research Group. It's an SFU group.
Yep, that was Dr. Andy here, who we heard from in the interview at the top of the show.
And I have here the next meeting,
yep.
October 3rd, which is a Friday. It's going to be at the 12:30 to 1:30, AQ 6036, I guess. Well, we'll remind people. You don't have to memorize it. But it's going to be, the topic is Waste Not, Want Not, Social Movements Effectiveness by Policy Decision Making, a Cross-Cultural Analysis of Nuclear Waste Facilities in Ontario and Hokkaido. we had tried to say it during the embark, how to say it properly.
Hokkaido,
which okay.
Which is
a Japanese.
The island, the northern end of Japan.
So that was it's the upcoming one. The last one for last month was the Future Pipelines in Canada. And after that one is on November 3rd is Washington's Clean and Just Energy Transition. December is carbon capture and storage, a massive mislocation of resources. So I guess that'll be brought forth. Maybe we'll make a point of bringing it up in the show and so on.
As Dr. Hira said, the meetings are in person. What was the room number again there?
I have to. It's AQ, but Academic Quadrant, the square we got here, 6036.
Okay, and as Dr. Hira also said, they are hybrid meetings, so you can also join in online as well, and you have to visit their information page to get that link or follow up directly with Dr. Andy Hira. But you're a chance to sort of find out more about all this kind of stuff firsthand. Had some comments, Peter.
Okay, I'd like to start off. One thing I'm going to start off with, I was looking at I heard it twice. I heard it Now, I heard it the third time. I was also looking at other things. Now, one thing, there's sort of, it seems to be a bit of a scam. It was more than one YouTube posting was talking about this, was about get a solar panel on your roof. Mm-hmm. You're going to save energy costs. You're going to be paying back to the grid. This seems to be a bit of a scam that's going across. I don't know if it's so much Canada. It seemed like the United States. It was being kind of presented. Now, solar energy has been in the zeitgeist for about 50 years or so. And I think that's 50 years. The future is now, as it were, or the future isn't now. I didn't like Reagan, but maybe that was sort of like the point. He says, get the solar panels off the White House, because that's really not how the future of solar energy would be anyway. It seems like the future is not that you have it on top of your house and you wind up. I mean, they had stories about people. They said, we have to pay for this. We have to pay for the energy we're not getting.
Yeah.
And so on. It seemed to be more that the future was more of you have like a bank of solar panels, and that collects energy in some form. So maybe it was sort of, the point of Reagan being, I mean.
Although at the same time, I think you could see that as maybe one of the first steps in the sort of taking that kind of energy policy and energy prospects and turn it into a kind of identity politics. Because, right, in the sense that, you know, it's not about the technology itself or its viability. It's like this badge that shows where you stand, you know, in the political spectrum, right? So coming out against solar energy at that point in favor of oil was part of that. And the right is really doubled or tripled down on that since then. And a lot of the discussion around energy and energy policy falls into that that kind of way of looking at it, where it's not really, you know, the idea that we should be, you know, for political reasons, because of our political affiliations, against this kind of energy and that kind of energy, or the whole thing of, you know, if you're a good person on the right wing, or you believe in climate change, or you don't believe in climate change, or you have a lot of excuses, and if you're someone on the left, you have, you know, I mean, why should it? These are just, you know,
no, but
energy
should
just, you know. I mean, we should be working towards cleaner, better forms of energy.
No, I agree with that.
Even if we weren't dealing with the issue of global climate change, that, you know, if we could eliminate. I'm going to let you talk. Don't worry.
It's my signal.
If we could eliminate cars in cities, we'd be a lot better off just for the lack of that pollution, even if climate change wasn't an issue. Okay.
Okay.
Stop stealing your time, Peter.
Okay. No, right now, 7% globally. Solar power accounts for approximately 7% of global electricity generation. Now, I think this is more of a scientific conundrum. How much can it be? I mean, that wasn't in the talk that he gave. And also, I re-listened to the Democracy Now! One that's like 12 days ago.
Yeah.
It's really not saying, well, what scientifically is the overall possibility? Now, last week on the internet, it was saying that globally in 2050, it could be 25% globally. And interesting enough, it's at 40% in the United States. Okay, so we're going to go here how much it is now in the United States. Okay, I'll just say some other things about it. So, I mean, that's a low percentage now globally, though. Only 7%. The whole thing is that how much can it be under the best circumstance? And I don't think it's going to be 100% solar. I mean, we can have it... But that aspect was... was an interesting thing. Yeah. He said that'll be include hydroelectric and wind and other means. He's trying about the Trans-Canada concept, which I'm going to be looking in for next week. But I just think that a lot of the proponents of solar kind of don't really tell you what exactly how far it can go.
Mm-hmm.
And that's sort of what my contention is. I sort of stand in the middle. I see no reason to sort of block having it go as far as it can go. On the other hand, I think that there's a bit of an exaggeration how good it can be. And in the talk that we heard at the beginning of the show, it was sort of, maybe slightly conspiratorial. It sounded to me like you're saying, oh, it's being blocked. Well,
I mean, I think there is, the oil industry is very wealthy and very mature and does have a lot of lobbying power. And so they do, and it's not just, they get a lot of subsidies. It'd be interesting to dig more specifically into that issue. But there's a weight in that industry and they want to protect themselves. And so it's not necessarily a conspiracy as it is just they have a certain amount of political and economic power that they can use to protect their position. I do see here that I've looked that currently solar power makes up about 20%, 21% of electricity generation in the U.S.
How much percent?
20%. 21%, which is quite substantial.
And that's after 50 years of this being sort of trotted out. The other thing I'm wondering, Magnus, you're the one who took it upon yourself to get the interview.
Yeah.
He doesn't really have a, how are we saying his name right? Anil Heller?
Anil Hira. But he goes by Andy.
He doesn't come from a scientific background. It's more of a political science background. I'm just sort of wondering. I would presume he's saying, and it's not totally invalid because he's sort of saying, well, we got to look at the economic political blockage.
Yeah, and I think there's two parts to the question. One is the scientific, technological, engineering side of it. It's just the development of the technology, and that's what's been happening and moving things forward to the point where, it is viable as an alternative financially and economically. You could run a business on generating. It's competitive, cost competitive with fossil fuels. So there's that engineering part, but there's a whole political and policy side, which is where I wanted to talk to Dr. Hira rather than say someone from the engineering school. That really is so important in seeing these transitions forward, because there are a huge amount of subsidies in energy generation, not just for.
Magnus, someone from the engineering school would maybe tell you how, from a technological standpoint, how foreseeable it is.
Yep,
and
I think that would be an interesting interview to do. Maybe in the coming weeks.
That's what I'm just saying. I'm saying that, I think that I'm sort of in the middle with this.
Right.
Because I've heard about this for a long time. I mean, I'm 62, so I've heard about solar energy for a long time. And that sort of, like the pretense was, put it on your roof, and you'll get it. Well, that doesn't seem to be it.
Well, for a long time, you could put it on your roof, but it was pretty expensive to do, and it might take you a long time to...
It's still expensive to do.
And it would take you a long time to see enough savings on your electrical bill to actually pay off that investment. And I know people who did it, but they weren't necessarily motivated by saving money. They were motivated by being able to take some sort of action, around cleaner energy. But where we're at is sort of, and maybe not on that small scale, but at a larger industrial scale where it's actually, the savings in the power generation is competitive with other methods. We got 15 seconds left.
I get 15 seconds. Okay, we got another show coming up called Democracy Now. Maybe they'll talk about solar energy again.
All right. Thanks for tuning in today. You've been listening to Speak Up here on CJSF 90.1 FM. Democracy Now! Is up in just, well, right now.